The Peril of Partial Obedience is the title of the message this evening in our study of King Saul. God created man and woman with a purpose. Part of that purpose was to reflect his image. God created mankind to be his image bearers for the purpose of bringing glory to himself. And then mankind went along, Adam and Eve were the first, and they chose pride over God's glory. They chose disobedience over obedience, and they chose to sin. And that sin, we know, not telling anything new, marred that image of God. So we no longer are perfect image bearers of God. We aren't good and acceptable because of sin. That sin comes from sinful desires. It comes from our motives, our desires that lead to actions. When Israel, going back to the Old Testament, when Israel began to sort of clamor and argue and dispute and make lots of noise about wanting a king, King Saul's kingship, his appointed being appointed a king, came right on the heels of the time of the prophets and the judges, and Israel wanted a king. Give us a king for once. We want a king. And so Israel's making all this noise, all of this desire in the heart to want what Israel wants, which was going against the grain of what God wanted and his purposes. It wasn't out of a desire to follow God, but out of a desire to be like the other nations that Israel started making all this noise about wanting a king. I invite you to look with me at the first king of Israel, King Saul. And I want us to see the unfortunate negative testimony that he left, the negative example he left for us that impacts even just our daily living. Men, women, and children alike, all of us. We don't find a positive example of obeying God in Saul. We don't. Even though he himself says, I was obeying God several times. We don't see a positive example of him obeying God. And if we are wise, like we've been studying the book of Proverbs, if we are wise, then we will listen to the lessons that God has given us, even through King Saul. We'll learn from Israel's mistakes. We'll learn from their mistakes in their selection of what they wanted for a king instead of what God wanted for a king. So perhaps you know the story well. Perhaps you know the account well. But I implore you, to use Paul's words, I beseech you, I beg of you to listen with fresh ears tonight. More importantly, to look at God's word with fresh eyes, seeing how this impacts us today. Learning from Saul's mistakes. Let's look at the word and see what God wants to say to us from the life of King Saul. We'll begin with the as I walk us through this account, with wanting what the world wants. That's the voice of Israel right now in this time. They wanted a king like the rest of the nations had. They wanted what the world wanted. The kingship, as I mentioned, of Saul was born out of very dark times in Israel. The times of the judges is recorded time and time again as a time characterized by people following their own sinful desires rather than following God. There was nothing wrong with wanting a king. That was great. In fact, God had a plan to provide a king. And so it was a good thing to desire a king. But the problem here was that Israel wanted a king of their own making, their own way, that was just like all the other kings in the nations around them. Scriptures are actually very, very clear on that. So what led Israel to desire a king? What was the desiring motive behind them? Well, 1 Samuel chapter 8 and verse 5 says, "And said unto him, Behold, thou art old, and thy sons walk not in thine ways." Now, speaking of Samuel, "Make us a king to judge us like all the nations." You need to take note of that. I need you to pay attention to that. Desire a king, that's good. Desire a king that's like all the other kings and all the other pagan nations? Oh no, we got a problem. We got a problem, don't we? In fact, actually, if you look at some other verses in the same chapter, go over verse 20, and it says, "That we also may be like all the nations. Can you believe this? Israel's at a point in time in our history where getting their way and getting what everybody else had was paramount to what does God want for us as a nation in Israel. A lot of things had happened to get Israel majorly to this point. It just didn't wake up one night and go, you know, I want to be like the pagan nations. Time after time after time after time, they've developed this sinful desire. So notice the displeasing statement that concerns Samuel. Like all the nations, there in verse 5. Like all the nations. Also like in verses 19 and 20 of the same chapter. So instead of following God, Israel was following the world. A simple message, a simple reality to put us in check. Their desires that had gone unguided and unchecked were to speak to Samuel, we want to be like the Joneses. There's no Joneses here tonight? No, okay. Just using a phrase here, very generic. We want to be like the neighbors. We want to be like the other societies around us. We want to be like everybody else. Can we just have a king that leads us and takes us into battle and does stuff for us and just tells us what to do? We don't like this prophet stuff. They wanted a king like everybody else, and that was a problem. Well, we know as believers, as a church, that the world system does not obey God. That's not the core of the world system. That's why we call it the world system and not God's system. And so because the world system does not obey God and is never to be imitated by God's people, this has not changed since the Old Testament. The world system is never to be imitated, desired, or duplicated by God's people. And yet we have Israel here crying out for what the world has. Sometimes God's greatest judgment, we're going to see this, sometimes his greatest judgment is giving exactly what we want to us. Giving us what we think we want so that we will in time see that, oh, this was bad. Why did I want this so bad? Have you ever experienced that before? I know I have, full disclosure. I know I have. I'm like, Lord, this would be best. I really want this. And that even sounds better than really what my heart was, because it wasn't a conversation with the Lord. It was just, I want, give me now. And sometimes we can misinterpret the Lord allowing us to have something. It's like, oh, it must be the Lord's will because I have it. It's come to fruition. Thank you, Lord. This must be your plan. When really, in reality, the Lord might be going, all right, you say you want this so bad, here you go. And when you fall apart and you fall flat on your face again and you see that this was not good for you, I'm still willing to take you back, right? And to forgive you for those who are repentant. Well, we see the Lord just doing this because the Lord gives Israel what they want. The Lord told Samuel that Israel's request for a king was a rejection of God as their king. What they were really wanting could be interpreted as, I don't want what God has planned for us. That's what their desire was saying. But until Israel recognized God's rule in their lives, a king would not meet their needs. No matter what king they set up, until they recognized it was God that they should be desiring, nobody would fill the void of what they were truly desiring. That's what sin causes us to do. It causes us to be stupid, to think poorly, to think we got it all figured out. If we can just get this kind of a leader and this type of a king, then things are going to be grand. But sin has just caused us to think in our own blind stupidity. This is what Israel was doing. Through a negative experience, God taught Israel to want him instead of the world. God taught them instead. He spoke to them and said, he used examples, and Israel had to get their nose bloody a little bit before they started realizing, you know, once again, God's way is better. Why do I keep forcing my own way? So here we are again. In 1 Samuel chapter 12 now, so jump ahead to chapter 12, 1 Samuel, and in verses 1 through 19, I won't read all of those verses this evening, but in 1 Samuel chapter 12, verses 1 through 19, Samuel presented Saul. He presented Saul as their king, and I'm certain he was a little bit reluctant to do so, because Samuel was close enough to the Lord to realize that this was no good thing, but he followed through anyway because the Lord had told him to. And so he presented Saul as king that Israel had chosen. Remember this. Don't forget this. Israel chose King Saul. Israel had asked for him. I should say Israel asked for him. God chose him in response to that. But however, he added, Samuel did in verse 13. Look at verse 13. Samuel presented King Saul, and he added that the Lord has set a king over you. You asked, you received. I can't imagine. If I was in Samuel's place, I probably would have wanted to say something like, and we'll see how you like it. Like, buckle your seats. This is what you wanted. Here you go. You want a pagan king? All right. Here you have a king who acts like a pagan most of the time. So notice in chapter 12, you're there probably already. In verse 14, notice this verse. If you will, fear the Lord and serve him and obey his voice and not rebel against the commandment of the Lord, then shall both ye and also the king that reigneth over you continue following the Lord your God. Samuel is using very careful words here. Do you notice the promise and the conditions he gives as he sets up the new king? Follow and obey God. And if you don't, his hand will be against them. This was a time in God's economy when God ruled directly. When if you obeyed and followed God, you reaped immediate blessing and favor with God as you obeyed him. And when you stepped outside of his will and you disobeyed his clear law given through the prophets and the judges and so on, then you could expect direct, immediate, in many cases, consequences from that. Israel should have known this. Israel knew this. And so Samuel tells them something that's nothing new at this, the coronation or the ordination, the inaugural announcement of King Saul. Samuel gives this, God gives this caution to Israel through Samuel. And there's promises and there's conditions in this. And then it's pretty cool because God punctuates, it's kind of like an exclamation point. He punctuates this with, if you look at the following verses, with a thunderstorm. Isn't that great? Wouldn't that be cool at the end of hearing a message from God? We're like, yes, Lord, I hear you. I know you're in charge. And what's really interesting about this thunderstorm, you're like, what's the big deal with the thunderstorm? Well, it came in the early parts of what we refer to the summer, the May, the June time of the year. That would be during the harvest of the wheat time. And it would be abnormal to experience thunderstorms at that time. And God punctuates this and what Israel's choosing to do with a thunderstorm. Israel goes, okay, all right, we got it. But hey, at least we got our king, right? Samuel then closes his exhortation. He says a few more words. He says a number of things. And he closes his exhortation with an invitation to return to following God. It's like a message. You want this? Here we are. We're on the brink of a new king. This is what God has allowed. He's given you a king. But hear, O Israel, don't stop following God. Follow after him. And this is the plea that Samuel presents to the people. Again, it wasn't wrong to desire a king, was it? It was not wrong. But the key here is that Israel wanted a king that fit their desires. When we want something that fits my desires instead of God's, it says, I am God, get off the throne. It's exactly what it says. It's nothing short of that at all. When we say, I want my way because I believe this way is better and I'm no longer going to wait on God, I'm no longer going to follow after God and his plan, however much is revealed to me or not in that moment, I want my way says that I am God. That's what Samuel is warning Israel of doing. The key here is that Israel wanted a king that fit their desires, not God's. And the key here to avoiding the peril of partial obedience is letting go, and even our lives, letting go of the things that we are convinced will take care of us. Letting go of the things that we are convinced will protect us and provide for us if they are something we trust more than God. Something we lean on and rely on more than God. Anything that gets in the place of letting God give us His solution to whatever we're facing. This isn't a generic sort of a just walk around and don't do anything and don't hope and don't pray and don't plan and don't store and stock and save. And no, not at all. Not at all. But all of that and more should never take place of God's solution is always better than anything I can come up with. And I trust God's solution. By the way, friends, God is so good. He's so loving. He's so kind. That for those that pursue to follow Him, He doesn't leave you in the dark wondering what in the world to do next. I believe God makes it very clear and it makes it very easy for us to follow Him as we are just students of His Word and sensitive to His leading. God's good God. I think sometimes we're often blinded to what God wants to do in our lives by what we're looking at, by what we see. I think sometimes we are blinded with, this is what I can see is happening, this is what I know is going to happen, this is who they are, or whatever it might be. We're blinded by what we see. Because I see it, that's all that's important. And it holds us back from trusting God in what He sees from His perspective, which is perfect. We're so entrenched sometimes in our own opinions that we actually, by way of our own choice and our own opinions, kind of like Israel did, we call it our desire. I just have a desire. I just have a want. When in reality, that want and that desire can be easily interpreted too many times saying no to God's revealed plan. Saying no to God's plan. Whether that might be pursuing a physical relationship outside the bounds of marriage. Maybe out of frustration, a physical relationship is pursued before marriage or from within out. Maybe it's, I want to go ahead and change jobs now because I want this, even though it would lead me to a life that would struggle to follow God more. Maybe it would be, whatever it is, you fill in the blank, folks, and there's ample opportunities for desires to lead us away. But when things get in the way foolishly to saying, no, God, my plan is best right now. This is what Israel was doing on a great national level. And this is what we do in our hearts on a private level when we choose our way over God's. We get so entrenched in our own opinions that we say literally no to God through our actions, foolishly insisting on our own way. And then when He gives it to us, like I mentioned earlier, sometimes we take that to mean we're in the will of God all along. See, this was great. This was wonderful. But disobedience, folks, disobedience is always expensive. Disobedience is always expensive. And our way, apart from God's way, is always ultimately destructive. We mustn't forget that. Go back to chapter 9 for a moment of Samuel. Told you we were jumping back and forth a little bit. So we pick up again in chapter 9. We look a little bit about what was so attractive about King Saul. What was so attractive about him? Chapter 9 and verses 1 and 2. Now there was a man of Benjamin whose name was Kish, the son of Abiel, the son of Zeror, the son of Becherath, the son of Apha, a Benjamite, a mighty man of power. And he had a son whose name was Saul, a choice young man, and a goodly. And there was not among the children of Israel a goodlier person than he. From his shoulders and upward, he was higher than any of the people. Wow. Now, guys, this was a pretty good-looking guy. This guy was sharp. He was strong. If they had the magazine of the best-looking man in the country, whatever, it would be King Saul. Every guy wanted to be like Saul. He wasn't king yet. Every boy aspired to be like Saul. And most all women in the nation knew Saul existed if they were anywhere near him. Saul was an attractive guy. He was mighty in valor. He was a strong man. He was capable. Although Saul didn't see himself that way. Did you know that? Saul didn't perceive himself as very much of a great guy. We're going to see that in a moment. But verses 1 and 2 of 1 Samuel 9 shows that with strong motives in play, Israel was impressed with Saul. Why? Not because he was a man that followed after God diligently. Not because he was a man that was known for making godly decisions and thinking wisely and temperately. Rather, the scriptures forever show us that in this moment, Israel was impressed with Saul because how he looked on the outside. How he looked, how he talked, how he walked, how he fought. Saul was a pretty neat guy. And that's who Israel wanted. But we know this, don't we, kids? God knows the heart. I know moms are known for having eyes in the back of their heads. I know moms and dads, when kids go in the other room, we could pretty much say what our children are doing without even seeing them. God sees even better than moms and dads. God sees the heart, doesn't he? He knows the heart. And he knew Saul's heart. And then in 1 Samuel chapter 10, verses 14 and 22, reveals some unusual and telling behavior of Saul. So I want to walk us through recognizing some of the temperament of Saul. Remember, Israel's choice for king because he looked good. Oh, he looked good. So Israel wanted Saul. He was taller, stronger, better looking. This is Israel's choice. Well, notice what they chose. Chapter 10. Come over to chapter 10. Look at several verses here. There's a whole description of this in verses 14 through 22. And it reveals some of the unusual telling behavior of Saul. In verse 16 of chapter 10, the scriptures say, "And Saul said unto his uncle," so we're picking up right in the middle of an account here, okay? Just want to draw out the character. Saul said unto his uncle, "He told us plainly that the asses were found, but of the matter of the kingdom. Wherefore Samuel spake, he told him not." That's the part I want you to focus in on. What's going on in the middle of this context, for time I won't unpack it all, is that Saul is withholding important information to his uncle. Now sometimes we like to get sneaky and say things like, "Well, I didn't actually lie." But do you know what fits in the category of lying? Knowing there's information that needs to be shared and withholding it. I think we can call that lying as well. This is Saul. This is revealing of Saul's character and his heart. Saul is seen here as being deceitful and withholding information. Then go to verse 22. "Therefore they inquired of the Lord further if the man should yet come thither. And the Lord answered, Behold, he hath hid himself among the stuff." Who do you think is being spoken of here? Saul. Saul being hidden. He's deceitful in hiding important information. And in verse 22, Saul hides when he's announced to be king. Does that sound like a strong, goodly king? A king that goes, leadership, hides underneath the wagon, behind the, well, I don't know, whatever it is. I'm picturing a wagon for some reason. Wherever it is. Saul runs and hides. I don't want to look at people. I don't want to see me. He's a little taller. It's a little harder to hide. Saul isn't very valiant, is he, in this description? Then over in chapter 15, way later, if you go over there, let me notice, draw something out to you. If we were to read all these passages in the life of Saul, this would come clearly to your mind. But in verse 17, way later, we find a little tidbit of information that shows perhaps what was going on in Saul's heart while he was hiding. Look at verse 17 of chapter 15. Samuel said, "When thou wast little in thine own sight." Samuel, in this moment here, is speaking to and about King Saul. And he draws Saul's mind back to when Saul perceived himself as being little, unable, fearful, not confident. Made a king, we see Saul's character, his behavior resulting from Saul's lack of confidence and his insecurity. Because of these realities in his life and succumbing to them, sometimes even a lack of confidence and security, instead of trusting the Lord in those things, can lead to sin to try to compensate, right? Sometimes those of us who perhaps may deal with inadequacies and lack of confidence may choose a route of sin to seek and cover, and Samuel certainly did. In 1 Samuel chapter 10 now, going back to chapter 10, Saul was given specific instructions from the Lord by Samuel. Saul was given instructions by Samuel. Samuel was somebody to listen to because Samuel was somebody who spoke for God. God would reveal his will to Samuel. Samuel would communicate and teach and prophesy and give this message to the people. Saul knew, he listened to, and spiritually speaking, answered to Samuel. So Saul was given instructions from the Lord by Samuel. And one of those instructions included waiting in Gilgal. So now we have another incident taking place. Saul, you're going to wait in Gilgal. You're going to wait for Samuel to come and offer sacrifices and show him then what to do. When you tell an insecure, arrogant, self-centered person to wait until someone else tells you what to do, you can almost write the story before it takes place, what that person will probably most be tempted to do. Take things in their own hands. I'm not going to wait. Why would I wait? I'm King Saul. Well, Saul does exactly that, unfortunately. Saul's first test as king was an absolute miserable failure. He failed. Can you believe that? Two messages in one Sunday about people failing. The apostles failed because they were faithless and they didn't pray. And now pastor's bringing a message about King Saul failing because he chose his own way and didn't wait on the Lord. Then God's trying to say something to us. Saul miserably failed. Instead of waiting, he took matters into his own hands. And waiting on God, by the way, folks, waiting on God means more than just time. Waiting on God means more than time. In fact, I would tell you this, that one of the most important factors in God's ways is obedience and trust in his timing. It's in his timing. We get so fixated on the chronological minutes and hours and days, weeks, months, and years, and decades, and millennia. We get so fixated on time frames that things need to happen in that we forget that waiting on God goes beyond just a measure of time to God's perfect timing. Do you see? If God is always good and he's good all of the time, if God is perfect and God is holy and God is righteous, then no matter the length of time we wait, God's timing is always best. Don't be caught thinking otherwise. Well, instead of waiting, Saul took matters into his own hands. He usurped the priestly role that Samuel alone held. Instead, he offered up a burnt offering to unite the people and prepare for war. You can read of this in the text, chapter 9. What was happening here with Samuel, with King Saul's sin was a classic example of situational ethics. Situational ethics. Here it is. Situational ethics is my surmising that in this moment of time and weighing and calculating these circumstances, it makes what was otherwise going to be wrong now right. King Saul succumbed to the sin of believing that situational ethics applied to his circumstances made it okay for him to go ahead, usurp the priestly role of making an offering, make an offering himself, and move ahead with the plan instead of waiting like the Lord had told him to wait. Saul believed the situation warranted ignoring God's explicit instructions. Church, here's a simple message. No situation ever warrants disobeying God. Ever. Where God says, follow me and do not disobey, we have no justified reason to ever violate God's clear law. That's the simple reality of God's truth. Saul got into a place that didn't happen overnight, because I believe it was a habit of his heart. But Saul got into the place of believing that his circumstances made his behavioral response now okay. But it didn't. It didn't change at all in God's eyes. If we simply walk in trusting obedience, we can always, church, we can always trust the outcome that God has for the situation. God simply says this, trust me, follow me, obey me. My plan is best. My plan is best. There's New Testament passages, Romans chapter 8, verses 28 and 29, remind us that God has purposes and plans for all things that happen, even when we suffer at the hands of those that mean us harm. Nothing justifies disobeying God. 1 Samuel 13. Go to 13 now. We're jumping all over the place. There's a lot about King Saul's life that we are not going to look at tonight. But in chapter 13, I want you to notice something else yet. 1 Samuel chapter 13. Verses 13 and 14. This is the account where Samuel is rebuking Saul for what he has done. This is in the middle of the context where, as a result of Saul usurping the priestly authority, going ahead and offering sacrifices anyway, Samuel now confronts him, which is Samuel's job. This is what God is using Samuel in part to do. Samuel confronts him, and we see more character fleshed out in King Saul. Okay, so look at this. See what the text says. 1 Samuel 13, verses 13 and 14. And Samuel said to Saul, thou hast done what? Foolishly. Don't you love it when somebody reminds you you've done something foolish? I don't. Thank God for many times in life, though, when God has used someone to patiently and to kindly say, David, that was foolish. You should not have done that. You need to correct that. Samuel was sent by God to speak to Saul about his foolishness. Verse 13, what was so foolish? Thou hast not kept the commandment of the Lord thy God. Thou hast not kept the commandment of the Lord thy God. This is where King Saul's situational ethics just crumble all to pieces now. All of his reasonings, all of his justification, because all he has done is clearly violated the clear will of God. Continuing the verse, which he commanded thee, For now would the Lord have established thy kingdom upon Israel forever. But now, and here's a result that Samuel reveals. But now thy kingdom shall not continue. The Lord hath sought him a man after his own heart, and the Lord hath commanded him to be captain over his people, because thou hast not kept that which the Lord commanded thee. I understand this is the Old Testament we're speaking of. I understand the very same unchanging God in which his character never changes, worked and acted in a little bit different function in relation to his people back in the Old Testament. But oh, New Testament believer, may we be careful to never get into a point where we seek to exhaust and try the patient grace of God in doing our own way and expecting God to bless it. Without results, without consequences, without chastisement from a loving God that seeks us to return to following him. Here we see in 1 Samuel 13, verses 13 and 14, identifying the sin and then showing the consequence. Samuel clearly identified Saul's actions as foolish and disobedient. His actions were nothing short of being foolish and disobedient. And the result was Saul's reaction as a permanent rejection. It was his rejection as a permanent leader. Israel would eventually reject him. God would reject him as a leader and raise up another leader who would follow after him, David. Saul had the outside appearance of a king. But Saul lacked the right stuff on the inside, didn't he? He had the outward appearance of being everything we wanted. We'll look like everyone else. Our nation will prosper the way the pagan nations are. We're tired of this prophet stuff. We're ready for the king. God has promised and said he's sending the king. A king will come. He will raise one up. And so we pick this one. Yeah, this is what we want. Samuel, no, this is what we want. Okay. The Lord says he'll give that to you, and now we see consequences already that were characteristically able to be seen for one who would look at the godly character of the man they chose to lead. And what happens? Israel pays as a nation, don't they? Sin is always expensive. Sin costs always more than we can pay. And sin, our own choice to sin, never leads to anything other than ultimate destruction. Israel ignored that. Israel ignored it because they allowed their motives to be unchecked. They once again forgot and turned away from the Lord's ways, and they chose their own ways. Can you not see the serious warning for our own hearts in this message? Of just wanting to get what I want, when I want it, how I want it, where I want it, instead of, God, is this what you desire? Just like this morning, and I encourage each one of us to pray the type of prayer that a doubtful father in pain prayed. Lord, I believe, but help my unbelief. Perhaps our prayer might best be something like this. Lord, help me to want what you want. Lord, teach me to value your ways, not my ways. Because, Lord, you have showed me in the Old Testament through the negative example of King Saul that there are detrimental, harmful consequences for my family, my relationships, my church, my community. When I go through life bowling and pushing for my way or the highway, right? I think that's a prayer that we can rightly pray to God. Almighty loving God, give me the desires of my heart that align with your desires. It's taken me quite a bit of time in life in different areas of things I enjoy. I won't go into great detail. Those of you know me know some things I'm interested in and enjoy, and in and of themselves, they're not wrong. There's various activities and hobbies in life that I've enjoyed, but do you know what? And this isn't a sad story. It's sad that it took so long. But it's neat to see that with every year that I grow older, and the more my children grow, and the longer I'm with my wife, and the more I get to pastor and lead you all, that there are some of those things that I am beginning to desire less and less. And it's not like my life is getting more depressing and boring, okay? I don't want to bore you. But I genuinely believe that as I'm seeking after God, He is replacing and He's cultivating those desires to be something even better than I thought I would ever desire. I'm being vague intentionally here because I don't want to distract you from perhaps what the Lord is tugging on your heart on tonight. But I want to challenge each and every one of us. We're going to stop here, and I've already decided now, I think the Lord would have us look at King Saul's life yet again on another Sunday night because we're not even halfway through. We're going to stop here tonight, and I want to leave you with this, that Saul is a sober reminder of the consequences of disobeying God. And that disobeying God began with internal heart motives to want what I want, not to follow after God. Let's be challenged to think carefully on how we avoid the peril of partial obedience. Later on, we're going to see that title resolved a little bit more. When Saul begins to argue back and defend himself, saying this, "But I did follow God, kinda. But I did do what God said, and I did obey him some of the time." And through Samuel, God shows us that even partial obedience of God is full disobedience of God. He wants our hearts, our minds, our bodies, our souls, all in full obedience with His perfect plan. And by the way, that's the best place to live. That's the best place to be.